Brother Welch is from the Health and Drive Church over in Florence. He works a lot. He's leading over there, college age, especially. There are quite a few that attend Health and Drive meetings, and they have regular studies. And is that on campus for those who still in houses?
Still in my house, still.
Okay. But still, I know he spends a lot of time with people your age, maybe a little older than some of the people. I really appreciate him and his work. I think I have some important things to say to you about influence, so give him full attention. Then come ahead and give us some more from the office time.
We got number four. What about it? It's up there. Sorry. I don't need a book, so.
Well, good afternoon. Just want to take a moment to say thanks for being here. Appreciate you taking some time out of your Saturday afternoon to come and study together with us. Really appreciate Steve's lesson for us as we consider what our purpose is. I've got one verse I want to add to that. It's Colossians chapter 1. It's my purpose verse. Colossians chapter 1 and verse 16. I just want you to look at the last phrase in Colossians chapter 1 and in verse 16. It says that all things were created through him and for him. You put your little finger over all things and you write your name up above it because that's you. You were created through him and you were created for him. And now that we have our purpose in mind, what God's plan is and what God's purpose is for us, I think it's fitting for us to take a few minutes and think a little bit about our influence. Once we are living for God and we've made up our mind that that is our job to please the Father, to serve Jesus Christ, then that should bleed down into our influence for others. And so I want to think a little bit about that with you here today. Before we get started with that, though, how many Gen Alphas do we have here today? Maybe you don't know what a Gen Alpha is. That means that you were born between 2010 and 2024. Now, if you're born in 2024, you're probably not going to raise your hand. But 2010, right, get them up high. Now, 2010, ooh, we got several. There's a bunch of you here. Okay, that's good. Well, the reason why I'm sharing that, all right, if you're not born, if you're born pre-2010, if you're born 1995 to 2009, just so you know, you're Gen Z. And if you're born 1980 to 1984, you're Gen Y. And I hate to say it, but I hit 1979, so I'm Gen X. I'm one of those Gen X people, okay? But Fortune magazine shared the results of a survey that was conducted in 2024, just a year or so ago, among 12 to 14-year-olds. So I'm assuming there's a few 12 to 14-year-olds here. And the question was asked, what do you aspire to be when you grow up? And can you guess what the top career aspiration was on the list? What's that? Astronaut. Oh, I wish it was astronaut. Astronaut, no, it wasn't. Here, you got one? Social media, you're right, you're right. Social media influencer. A whopping 32% said they wanted to be a YouTuber. And 21% want to be a TikTok creator. Another 15%, they want to be an online streamer. Now, these three different career options are all part of one broad category, and that is influencers. We want to be social media influencers. Now, what is an influencer? Well, in the social media world, an influencer is someone who uses various social media platforms to influence or to steer others. Now, these people post content that gets liked, it gets shared, it gets followed more than others, indicating their influence. It just indicates that they're influential in the social media world. Now, of course, the larger your platform, the more people share it and like it and follow it and subscribe to it. That's why they all say subscribe to my channel after they get done doing something. Well, the larger your platform, the more value you bring to the platform and to other companies and to other products and to other causes that you might be trying to promote. With the top influencers making money in the millions, it's no surprise that young kids want to be the next Mr. Beast. He's number one among YouTube content creators. I think he made around 80 million last year, something like that. Jake Paul, he's number three on the list. Some of you may know him more for boxing than social media. Or maybe Charli D'Amelio, she's number six on the list, to the bottom left there. Or there's Khaby Lame, who doesn't even say anything. He just makes facial expressions at funny videos, basically, and makes millions of dollars doing that. Or Ms. Rachel, she's just climbed onto the list. And I didn't know who any of these people were, but I have an 18, a 20, and a 22-year-old, and they know who these people are because these are influencers. And if you're on social media, these are people who you might be familiar with. Now, unfortunately, if you were to walk through the list of some of the top influencers, we begin to quickly see how some of them are seeking to gain influence. Some go viral because of their over-the-top pranks. Some, if you look at the top 25 list, some of them are comedians. Some of them get attention because they dress provocatively and they act provocatively. Some rage bait. I didn't know what that word meant until a few months ago either. I guess that's a word that young people are using too. But some rage bait, and they light the fires of controversy, and that's how they get people watching. They want to make you mad. They want to get you fired up. And some talk sensually, and they talk about very bawdy topics. Not every social media influencer needs to be villainized. I'm not trying to villainize all of them. There is some legitimately clean and productive content out there. However, as Christians, I think we need to think deeply about, first of all, the importance of influence and how Jesus Christ has called us to exert that influence. Let's think about that word influence for a moment. Influence is a word, according to Cambridge Dictionary, it means this: to affect or change how someone or something develops, behaves, or thinks. When you're trying to influence someone, you're trying to affect how they behave or affect how they think. You're trying to change how they behave, trying to change how they think. You're an influencer if you can get people to change their behaviors or change their thinking. So essentially, influence, it's a leadership word. It's a word that's connected with leadership. Now, you don't have to be an appointed leader to influence other people, though. I mean, kings are expected to have influence, but this does not mean that an everyday cupbearer like Nehemiah is incapable of exerting influence upon the king. Husbands are to be the head of the home, but that doesn't mean that a godly wife cannot exert influence by her conduct. Just look at Esther in the Old Testament, or read 1 Peter 3, which is emphasizing the importance of a godly wife trying to, by her example and conduct, influence perhaps her non-Christian husband. Elders are supposed to be shepherds of the local church, but that doesn't mean that others do not and others cannot exert influence for good and sometimes for ill in a local congregation. And so right away, I want you to see that you can have an effect on the character, on the development, or on the behavior of someone or something, sometimes the local church even. Romans 14 and verse 7 says this. It says, not one of us lives for himself, and not one dies for himself. It's kind of an interesting statement. No one lives for himself, no one dies for himself. So there's no doubt about this. I think the basic idea is this. Your life influences. You're not living on an island somewhere. Because you're around other people, your life, your example, your words, your deeds, it influences other people. Nobody lives for himself, and even at your death, you influence people. You leave a legacy sometimes that influences people far beyond even your lifespan. Jeroboam in the Old Testament, it's constantly repeated, this king followed in the sins of Jeroboam. Jeroboam was long gone, and yet people were still repeating the sins of Jeroboam throughout Old Testament Israel. And so our legacy can continue long after our life does. So there's no doubt about this. Your life influences others either positively or negatively. And it influences people to be more godly, or you can influence people to be more worldly. Many Bible characters show us the dual possibility of influence. For example, the serpent from the very beginning was trying to influence Adam and Eve to do evil, to make the wrong choice. And anyone who follows the serpent's tactics today might very well be trying to get you to do the same thing, using almost the same arguments in many cases. Influence can happen in a negative direction. Then Solomon's wives, we read in 1 Kings chapter 11 that he married, he had 700 wives, he had 300 concubines. There's mistake number one. One is tough enough, but he's got 1,000 of them, and yet some of them are Baal worshipers. Some of them are worshiping false gods. And it says one of the tragic things that happened in the life of Solomon was his wives turned his heart away from the Lord. Turned his heart away from the Lord. Sad. What a great father that he had. David, who taught him and who wrote so many psalms and who certainly would have been an influence on his life, prays for wisdom, has wisdom, but doesn't clearly always apply it. Solomon's heart was turned away from the Lord. And then, of course, we read this classic passage that if you've grown up in the church and you've heard, you know, lessons about influence and friendship and things like that, you've heard this. 1 Corinthians 15:33, evil companions corrupt good morals. When you put yourself around the wrong people, they can influence you in a negative direction. And can I suggest something? When I was in college, I was an English education major. I minored in communication studies. And so communication is actually one of the ways that this passage is translated. Sometimes it's evil companions, sometimes it's evil communications. And I like the word communication a little bit better than companion. Because communication, all you need for communication is a sender and a receiver. All right? That's what communication is. A sender and a receiver. And communication to me, we need to also include in that, not just the friends you may be sitting with physically right now, but all the communications that surround you in your life. The music you listen to, the TV shows that you watch, the influencers on social media that you're subscribing to, The people that you're seeing their posts and their content and their reels as you are on social media, these are people who are communicating something to you and are influencing the way you think and the way you behave. And we need to be reminded evil communications can corrupt good morals. There may be some times when we realize that they are trying to steer us in the wrong direction. We need to unsubscribe, unfollow, unlike, and quit allowing them to influence our minds and our thinking. But others in the scriptures were good influences. You have people like Joshua who said, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And then you read later in the chapter of Joshua chapter 24 that all of the elders who outlived Joshua continued to be faithful to the Lord even after his death. He had a positive influence. You read about people in scripture like Esther, who stood before the king and made a request that saved her people. You read about people like Jesus in scripture. You read about Paul, who visited and traveled from city to city and planted churches preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ as he did so. And then you read about in scripture about peer companions, good companions who can have a positive impact upon your life and a good influence on you. And we're encouraged to have these people around us. So what kind of influencer will you be and are you to the world around you? I want you to think about that and think about that honestly and think about that deeply. What kind of influencer are you to the people in your life? How are you impacting them? Is it for good or is it for ill? And how can you change that? How can you become the type of influencer that Christ calls you to be, and how can you accomplish that? We need to be very careful that we get our ideas not from the world. And that's the danger of some of the social media influencers. Sometimes we see how influential they are, and we think, well, if I just use those tactics, I can be popular, I can be rich, I can have all of this influence. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15 says, "Don't love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. All that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, it's not of the Father, but it's of the world. And the world is passing away." So if they're trying to influence you through lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life, sensual things, things that appeal to your pride, things that appeal to your lust, we're told here the world is passing away and the lust of it, and you are pursuing something that is ultimately empty. But he who does the will of God abides forever. That's what we should be pursuing, and that's how we should be trying to influence others. So we need to go to God's word for the answers if we want to know how to influence people. And this is such a broad topic that when you look through the inspired scriptures, they have so much to say about both positive and negative influence. We could go a lot of different directions. Nearly every Bible character is a template for either a good influence or a bad influence, for one or the other. We can use the heroes of the Bible to learn about how to be an influence for good. I'd encourage you to think about that after we're gone here. We can use the villains of the scriptures to learn about the dangers of negative influence. But perhaps one of the best texts, I think one of the most probably standard texts, if you will, about influence comes from an illustration that Jesus himself uses in Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. And this may be a scripture that you're familiar with, but I want to try to dig a few things out of it that might be helpful teaching, helpful reminders, helpful encouragement to you here today. Matthew chapter 5, 13 through 16. I'm reading from the New American Standard Bible, the 1995 version. It says in verse 13, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world." You notice he says you're two things. You're the salt of the earth, and you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket. We sing songs about that when we're kids, right? Hide it under a bushel. No, I'm going to let it shine. It comes from this passage. Nobody lights a lamp and puts it under a basket. That'd be foolish. Nobody opens up their cell phone and then hits the flashlight on it and then says, "You know what? I think I'll just put it in my pocket." If you're in the dark and you need a flashlight, you hold the flashlight out so it can help you see where you want to go. So it'd be foolish for you to light a lamp and then cover it and hide it. Instead, what you do, especially in houses where there, and this is hard for us to fathom, where there's not electricity, and where there's not light switches, and when there's not light everywhere, what you did if you wanted to light up a house after it went dark is you took a light and you put it on a lampstand somewhere in the middle, or perhaps on the wall of a house, and it gives light to all who are in the house. He says, you're a light like that. You need to be a light that's on a lampstand. So let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Well, after the Beatitudes, all right, that's the first, 10 verses of the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew chapter 5, blessed, 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 blessed. After the Beatitudes, Jesus shares two similitudes to help us understand our role as influencers in his kingdom. Pliny the Elder, he was a Roman, he once said this, there's nothing more useful than sun and salt. And perhaps that was a phrase that was familiar to Jesus, we don't really know, a phrase familiar among the Romans, but it's interesting that Jesus chooses sun, light, and salt to try to make his point here. And he takes that idea and he teaches a spiritual lesson. And so I want you to think about what it means to be salt and light. All right, let's start with the salt portion. He says, you are the salt of the earth. Let me get you to think about salt a little bit for a moment. What that implies for you and for your influence. Salt is powerful. I want you to understand that first. Salt is powerful. You can take a big old 16-ounce porterhouse steak, and you can just take a teaspoon of salt and make sure that you evenly coat that thing and you cook it on the grill, and it can have a powerful impact upon that steak. And so salt is powerful. Just a little bit of it can go a long way. You read a lot of recipes, and they'll say you just need a pinch of salt. Just a little bit can do the trick, can accomplish what needs to be done when you're making that recipe. Salt is powerful. In this passage, he says, you are the salt. You are the salt, and you're the salt of the earth, this entire earth. You, little old you, you can make a big impact upon the earth and upon its people. I think it's important for us to think about, when we look at Scripture, the power of one. Think about examples. You might think to yourself, well, I'm just one person. Who can I really help? How can I really effect change? Nobody's going to listen to me. I don't think that's true. I think you're selling yourself short. I think you're selling the God who can work through you short when you do not believe that he can work through you. God worked through Joseph. Joseph, who at the time God was working through him, was a prisoner in an Egyptian prison. And God worked through Joseph to save the Egyptian people from famine and eventually his own family through his wisdom. God worked through the power of one. Esther may have thought, well, I'm just a pretty face who happens to be married to the king. Nobody's ever going to listen to me. Nobody really knows who I am other than I'm just the king's wife. And yet God used her through her courageous moment as she made request to the king. God used her to save the Israelite people, the Jewish people, from annihilation from the Persians because she spoke up, just one person. God used Daniel and his three friends when you read the book of Daniel. And Daniel oftentimes effected change through not just one kingdom, but through two kingdoms, the Babylonians and then the Medo-Persians. God used Paul, somebody who said, I'm not very eloquent of speech. I know I'm not the most impressive person in appearance, Paul said, but I'm going to preach Christ crucified. And through the power of the Spirit, he effected change. Paul, Daniel, Esther, Joseph, how many more examples could you think of where we read in Scripture about the power of just one person? Little old David, 17-year-old, the youngest boy in his family, fighting against Goliath. The whole point of that ride is that David just had the courage and the trust in God to deliver him, and God could do something with him. Salt is powerful, and I think what Jesus is trying to remind us of here is that we have real power when we are working with God. One person in a family, you can change the entire course of that family. One godly person on a team, you can change the entire attitude of that team. Sometimes teams will even bring in a person to say he's a good locker room guy. He may not ever even see the court because he's got a positive attitude and because he has championship experience. We bring him in because he can really change the work ethic, the demeanor, the attitude, the teamwork and cooperation of a team. One godly person in a workplace can change how that workplace does business. One godly person in a nation could change the course of a nation and has changed the course of nations. Salt is powerful. With salt, I'd offer a second thing to you as you think about salt. Salt suggests purity as well. Salt suggests purity. In fact, if you're going shopping for salt, you know, they can actually make synthetic salt now. So you might want to look when you're shopping. I like real food. I don't like meat that's made in a lab somewhere. I like real meat that comes from a real cow and not from a laboratory. And I like real salt that actually comes from the earth and not something that's synthetically put together. So you look for the word pure salt. Maybe it's pure Himalayan salt or pure Celtic salt. There's all kinds of salts, actually. It's kind of interesting. But you look for the pure stuff, the good stuff. And salt sometimes suggests purity. There is impure gold. That's gold that's mixed with other metals. There can be also impure blood. That's why they test your blood when you're going to donate blood to make sure that there's no diseases, no infections in it, because they want your blood to be disease-free. It can also be impure people. And if you're going to have an impact upon the world, then I would suggest to you that you need to be a person of purity. Jesus has suggested that earlier in Matthew chapter 5. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 8, he says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." We need to have pure hearts. What's that mean? It means that our motives for serving God are not mixed with impure motives. I'm not just here to make mom and dad happy. I'm not just here because my buddies are here today and I needed somebody to hang out with. No, I'm here because, as Steve mentioned to us, I want to please God and serve him and learn how to better please and to serve him. I have pure motives. And when you have pure motives, it's going to lead to pure actions and it's going to lead to more effective influence. But when you mix following Christ with following the world, it just isn't going to work as well. You cannot serve God and mammon, Jesus would say later in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6. You can't serve both. So you need to make up your mind if you're going to truly follow and completely follow Jesus. So be pure. Be pure in heart. Be pure in action. In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and in verse 12, 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12, Paul's writing to Timothy, who's a young man. It's interesting what perhaps Paul would have referred to as a young man. He's probably about 30, a lot of estimates would say. But he's writing to Paul here in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. And this is a passage that I almost thought about just preaching from this passage, but we just want to make sure we mention it. Verse 12, he says, "Let no one despise your youth." So Timothy, you're a young evangelist. There's going to be some older heads, some gray heads. They may look down on you a little bit because you are younger. They may be waiting for you to trip and fall. Don't do anything that's going to somehow bring harm to your teaching. It's going to cause people to look down upon you. So here's what he says. Be an example to the believers in word. In word. Don't think that you can speak in a pure way around some people and speak in an impure way around other people. That will affect your reputation, your influence. You're cursing, you're gossiping, you're slandering, you're backbiting. You do those things. You're excluding people with your words. You do those things. It's going to hurt your influence, Timothy. Be an example in word. Be an example, as he goes on, he says, be an example in your conduct. The word conduct is actually the exact same word that's used in 1 Peter 3 of a woman in her dress, by the way. And so I like to make that point because it emphasizes clearly the woman's dress in 1 Peter 3 and dressing modestly as part of her conduct, but it's also the part of a conduct of a man. Dress in a way that's respectful. Dress in a way that's professional. Dress in a way that's appropriate for the occasion. That's part of your conduct. Don't embarrass yourself by how you dress. So he says, be an example in conduct, in your behavior, how you carry yourself, how you walk, how you act. Be an example in love. Yeah, set the tone for how to love people. Be an example in spirit. Have you ever met somebody, you try to get them to do something like, I don't know, I don't really feel like it, you know. Just kind of lazy, no motivation, they're not motivating. Be fervent in spirit, excited to serve the Lord, excited to do things for the Lord, excited to help other people. fervent in spirit. Be someone who's an example in spirit, in faith, and here's the last one, in purity. In purity. Now, what's he mean when he talks about impurity? Let me give you one little hint. 1 Timothy chapter 5, just look down a couple of verses. He uses the word again. And he uses it in this context, in how we have our relationships and how we treat people. He says, don't rebuke an older man. Timothy, you're young. Make sure that you don't rebuke an older person. That can come across the wrong way. Exhort him as a father. Younger men, treat like brothers. You can be a little more straightforward with men who are your age or younger. Older women as mothers. When you have older women in the congregation, you treat them like you would treat your mom. You be careful how you speak to them and how you act. And then notice this, younger women as sisters with all purity. What's that mean? You would never think about doing anything that was sensually or sexually inappropriate with your sister, would you? So this passage is telling Timothy, you make sure when you're around the younger women, you treat them the same way that you would treat your sister. And if any guy is out there trying to treat a woman in a way that's inappropriate, in a way that you wouldn't touch or talk to or text or treat your sister, you better back off of that. Because you're not acting appropriately, you're not acting with purity. Salt suggests purity. One of the things that can really hurt your influence and injure your influence among not just young people, but older people and everybody is when we get engaged in impure things. And in the world today where we have porn in our pockets and on our cell phones, that's one of the ways that you can really get trapped in and locked into things that are impure, that hurt your heart and will hurt your influence for the Lord. Salt suggests purity. Salt also preserves. And I think really, if we're thinking about the key point that Jesus is trying to make in this context, I think it's all about that salt preserves. You see, back before we had refrigerators and chest freezers and all those things that we have in our modern world today, if they were going to preserve meat, they had to salt it. So they would cover that thing in salt, and then they would put it perhaps in a storage locker or somewhere down. They would actually sometimes bury it somewhere down low, below the ground where it was nice and cool. And they would do that to prevent it from decaying. When the little boy came up to Jesus and his apostles and he had 5 loaves and 2 fish, and then Jesus took those 5 loaves and 2 fish and he fed over 5,000 people with it, those 2 fish probably weren't just something that he caught out of the sea. They were probably 2 salted fish that he had brought with him as he packed his lunch so that he would have something to eat while he was there on the hillside listening to the teaching of Jesus, perhaps away from home. Because that's what they did with little fish. They just salted them. The salt preserved them long enough that you could eat them. What's the point of that? The point of salt is to keep meat from decaying. Because we know if we set meat out, you don't do something to it, either refrigerate or salt it, then it's going to decay. It's going to go bad. It's going to rot. You're not going to want to eat it. It's going to make you sick. Now here we are. We are the salt of the earth, we're told in this text. And so the salt's job is to keep the earth and the people of it from getting worse. So do you make people better around you? Do you make people better around you? That's the point. Or do people actually get worse because of your influence? There's certain people that you can put yourself around, and because of their influence, their impact, you're a better person because of them. And then the opposite can be true. There's certain people that you can get around in your life, and because they're always trying to get you to do the wrong thing, to say the wrong thing, to talk about this person, talk about that person, they're a negative influence on you. They actually make you a worse person by their influence. Well, what kind of person are you? Influencing people for good or influencing people for ill? Back when I was, I used to preach in Kokomo, Indiana. It's about an hour north of Indianapolis. I was born and raised in Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm a graduate of Indiana University. I was told not to say that this week because of what happened. I apologize. I was at a church an hour north of Indianapolis in Kokomo, Indiana. I used to play basketball with a bunch of guys who were all just pretty good guys. Some of them were from different, you know, area churches and things like that. But morally, they were decent guys, right? They didn't cuss. They weren't out smoking. They all had families. They were family people. Nobody wanted to hurt anybody on the court. And sometimes, since we all played together pretty regularly, we played Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 6 a.m. We'd get up, and then we'd all go to work around 8. If somebody would show up there, and they would start cussing, getting mad, slamming the ball down, trying to start a fight, there would be plenty of guys in there who would say, we don't talk like that here. That's not how we play. That might be how they play on the courts where you're from, but here, we don't cuss. We don't want any of that. And if that's what you want, that's not what we're about here. And I appreciated that I had some guys like that to play basketball with for a few years while I was young enough to do it. they had a positive influence on other people, and even on me, by seeing them take stands like that. My grandpa was my hero, and my grandpa was somebody like, I would never think twice about saying a cross thing or doing anything inappropriate ever in his presence because of how dignified and respectable that he was as a human being, as a person. I never saw or witnessed anything like that from him in my whole life. He made me better being around him. He made me think I'd like to be more like him. So what kind of person are you? Are you keeping people from decaying? Or are you helping people be better? When you see something on your friend's social media, when you see them doing something maybe that's wrong, are you the person who's willing to say, you know what, can we talk about this? I saw what you posted. I heard what you said. I've been hearing that you're doing this with this person. I think maybe we need to talk about that because I love you and I want to help you. Or are you someone who's encouraging it, patting it on the back, liking it? Are you helping people get better, or are people getting worse? All right, salt preserves. Salt makes food palatable, too. I like salt. It makes food taste better. And I just want to say this about Christians. I think Christians should be the type of people who just make the world a better place. And that sounds very cliche. But when you're living out Galatians 5, 22 and 23, love, joy, peace, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, when you're living that, you are making the world a better place for the people who are around you. You're making life more palatable for them. The world is very cruel. I don't think we can totally even grasp that, especially if you've been raised in a Christian household and you've always been around Christians. I don't think we always can easily grasp what it's like to grow up in a godless household, someone who has no respect for God or the things of God, and how hard that can be for some people. When I was preaching in Kokomo, we had two different families, and they were both from broken homes. One had lesbian parents. The other one had two parents living together, so there was two families that had kind of both left their previous partners. They were living together, weed being smoked, alcohol being drank. When the parents were drunk, kids were getting beat up and abused, sometimes not being fed. Those kids love coming to our house. And they came to our house because it was like a respite away from their homes. Because they knew that they were in a place that was safe. They were in a place where they didn't have to worry about anybody drinking, smoking weed, screaming. I do a little bit of yelling every once in a while. Probably shouldn't. I mean, it's a pretty good place. My daughter's here, I have to be honest. I mean, we live in a good place, though. We have a Thursday night study. I've mentioned this to a couple of people. Steve mentioned we have a lot of college students at Helton Drive and even college students from other places. So every Thursday night during the semester, we have a college study at our home. And there's anywhere from 15 to 25, you know, college-age kids in our family there. And some of those students are students who live in the dorms at UNA. And some of them love coming over on Thursday nights because it's just a chance to get away from a roommate that's letting her boyfriend try to come in and sleep, that's maybe bringing alcohol into the room, that's partying, that's on the phone gossiping, that's watching things that they don't want to watch. And so some of them like being able to just get away and be in a place, it's a family environment where they can just study the Bible. Sometimes we eat together afterwards, play some cards. It's just a way to get away from that. That's why a lot of them move out of the dorms year one, year two, or year three as well. So they can have their own roommate, so they don't have to be dealing with those sorts of things. We need to be the type of people who make life palatable for others, making their life better. All right, I would also say this, though. I think Jesus says that if you're not going to be salt, if you're not going to be someone who tries to exert your influence upon the world, who tries to live a pure life, who's trying to help make people better, preserving the world from going to rot and decay, who just makes life more palatable, then you living the Christian life is actually somewhat pointless because you're not living the Christian life. Being a Christian is more than just getting baptized. Being a Christian means I want to be a follower of Jesus and who he was. And Jesus was a person, when you read before you get to the Sermon on the Mount, he was a person who went about doing good and proclaiming the gospel and healing people who were in need. If you really want to be a Christian, then you're speaking about the things of God. You're trying to do good and serve other people. You're trying to live like him and helping people. And so if you aren't living like Jesus, really not acting like a Christian yet, and you won't have much of an impact upon the lost world. It's fairly pointless. Well, let's get to the light portion. I think I've got 5 minutes left, so you know I got 1 minute per point. That'll be fun. You are the light of the world. That's the other, and I haven't been keeping up with my slides either. I'm sorry. You are the light of the world. Matthew 5:16 says this, in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. He had just said earlier, you're the light of the world. So what does light do? Well, light reflects. So I'm going to go through that point really quickly. It's not you who's impacting people. It is the light of Jesus Christ who said, I am the light of the world reflected in you, who is actually doing good and persuading and impacting other people. So are you reflecting Jesus? Do you know Jesus? Well, what does light do? Well, we're told that light shines. Light shines. You're the light of the world. A city that's set on a hill can't be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket. They put it on a stand. It gives light to all who are in the house. What's the purpose of light? The purpose of light is to shine. Well, how? Verse 16 says that people may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Titus 2 says that we are to, because of the grace of God and its impact upon our life, we are to be a people who are zealous for good works. We shine by being people of good works. When I was, again, living in Indiana at this point, we had a couple of students who had come over for a gospel meeting, and they had dinner at our house before. And I was so impressed with these young kids. They were from Purdue University. And after dinner, they didn't ask, can I help clean up? They just started taking the plates to the sink, and they rolled up their sleeves, and they started washing the dishes. And I was so impressed by that small act, because that's not normal with a lot of teens and college-age kids. They just kind of like eat, and they're gone, right? They ate, and they realized it's a lot of work to clean all this up. We had a couple little kids at that time. Let me see how I can help you. They made a big impact, a big impression on me. They're still serving the Lord today. They're good kids. You want to make an impact upon the world, just be a person of good works. Go home tonight, and when you get home, if there are dishes in the sink, if there is laundry that needs to be done, if there is a room, go ahead and ask your mom and dad what you can do to help, and they will about fall over when they hear that from a lot of you probably. What did you just say? What are you doing? Why are you vacuuming? Be a person of good works. Go talk to the older people in your church. I know this is for younger people today, but when you get back to your churches on Sunday, and you're around some of them, be someone who's sincerely interested in the older people in your congregation. Pay attention to the widows and to the widowers. Let me tell you, those older people, they're going to appreciate the good interest that you're showing them and the respect that you're showing them by being just interested in them. Ask them how you can help them. Can I rake leaves for you? Can I come clean your house? Do you need me to take you to the dark? Wouldn't that be awesome if somebody who can drive, the teenager, you probably drive as good as a lot of them, okay? But wouldn't that be great if you were offering to take them to do things and do favors for them? Be a person of good works. Let your light shine. Whether that's at work, be a hard worker when you're at work. Whether that's on your team. My daughter Zoe is here. She played soccer all through high school. And one of the things that I always had to talk to Zoe about is like, don't act like your teammates. You act like the teammate you want them to be. Don't disrespect your coach like you might see other people disrespect your coach. You act like the person who's supposed to be respecting your coach because you're a Christian. You're light. When you talk to those refs, you don't talk to the refs like you hear other people talking to the refs. You talk to them like you're a Christian. And even when you lose and you're upset, you treat your opponent with respect when you get done so that you walk off that field with some dignity and some respect. You act different because you're a Christian than everybody else does. You shine. Shine in the way you dress, shine in your dialogue and what you say to other people, shine in your disposition, shine in your deeds. There's some ways that you can shine. But I have to mention this before we get done. Light also exposes. Light exposes. And that's what some people don't like about the light. That's why they don't want to come to the light. You know, everybody looks good in the dark. Just ask Jacob. He didn't. When the lights were up the next morning, he saw Leah. He was kind of wondering why he got ripped off there. He wanted Rachel. What happens when we turn on the light? Well, it shows us our imperfections. We see that hair on me is starting to gray. You start to see the facial imperfections. You start to see the things that you maybe don't like about yourself. That's what light does. Light shines a focus on some things that aren't right. And that's what the light of Jesus does. Look at a couple passages. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 11 through 13. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 11. It says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. Shine a light on them. For it's shameful to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. All things that are exposed, verse 13 says, are made manifest by the light. And when Jesus spoke in John 3, he explained why people hate the light. He said, people hate the light because their deeds are evil. But people who want to be shown the way, they appreciate the light. They appreciate being exposed because it helps them to see the right way that they can act. You know, we get mad sometimes and we think Christians, they're just so judgmental. They're preaching about things that people shouldn't do. They're trying to show us. Friends, we don't say that about the tornado siren, do we? That tornado siren, always so negative, always telling us when bad things are going to happen. No, that's a good thing that the tornado siren went off. You can go protect yourself. We don't say that about the doctor, do we? That doctor always has bad news. I don't even want to go to the doctor, you know? He's always negative, always telling me how my blood work is not right and how I need to eat healthier and I got to do this, do that. Well, that's the doctor's job. They're trying to help you live longer. They're trying to save you from danger. One day they might save your life, actually. We appreciate that. And the Christian's job, because we realize that there is a day of reckoning, and there's a judgment day, and there's an eternity to follow, one of our jobs is to try to let people know what it is they need to do to be right with the Lord before that day comes. And sometimes that means we have to expose sin and the unfruitful works of darkness. Light exposes. Light also guides. Try to be someone who's a guide to other people, someone that they can follow, because some people need that sort of guide. Some people don't have the courage to stand by themselves, but if they have somebody who's set the example of standing up and speaking out, they'll follow that good example. So don't be afraid to have the courage to speak up. But light also impresses. That's why we go to fireworks shows on the 4th of July. One of my favorite painters is Thomas Kincaid. He's called the Painter of Lights. He's got just every light that could possibly be on in his paintings is on. He's called the Painter of Lights because light is beautiful, and the way that he paints it is beautiful. Light impresses, and when the light of Jesus Christ is shining in you, you will be impressive. You know, sometimes people say, I don't really want to be a Christian, I just want to be different. It's funny people will say that, I want to be different, and yet you want to do your hair like the world is doing, you want to wear the same holes in your pants like the world is wearing, you want to dress the way that they're doing, you want to listen to the exact same music everybody's listening to, you don't want to be different, because if you wanted to be different, you'd be a Christian. Because Christians are very different, but different in a good way, because we've been transformed by the power of God to the renewing of our minds so that we can be acceptable sacrifices to God and so that we might please Him. If you want to be different, be Him. Follow Him. Well, final conclusions about salt and light, and then I'm done. You can't hide from the world, so don't be afraid to impact it. Be cautious of ruining your salt. Make sure that you're not being tainted by the world. And remember what this is about. This is not about glorifying you. This is about so that people might glorify your Father who is in heaven through you. We're just vessels. We're signposts to the world. What would you think if, you know, somebody didn't know their way around and somebody went out here in the middle of the night and they switched 72 west and 72 east, they flip-flopped the signs, they put 65 north and 65 south, and they flip-flopped the signs, and all of a sudden everybody's going the wrong direction. We're supposed to be signposts to the world. In other words, people look at us and they can watch us because we are Christians, and they can be guided in the right direction towards Christ themselves. But when we don't act like that, everything is chaos. We're sending people in the wrong direction. So let's make sure we're pointing others in the right direction by our words and by our deeds. Thanks so much for your good attention. Appreciate it.